Blog Talk Radio.
Come shine your light, open your heart, show us your gift that sets you apart. When you believe, then you can see that you are the star of your own destiny.
Hi, and welcome to the Honoring Hour. Today is Tuesday, November 2nd, and it's a brisk day here in Virginia where I am. We can really tell that fall has moved in finally. It's actually been some really strange weather here. So I hope that you all are enjoying the weather and life where you are. I wanted to just take a moment to mention the music that we just heard, Reach for the Stars, is by Sabina Kvenberg, and she has been gracious enough to let us use this year. And I have considered changing the music each year, every couple of years, on the anniversary of the show, which is in March. And so far, nothing has jumped out at me. So if anybody's out there listening and you know of something or someone that might be appropriate as a message, an introductory music here, I'm open to that. And if not, we can keep on using Sabina's because it's wonderful. If you haven't had a chance to listen to her album, you can connect with her on the archives page of The Honoring Hour, www.thehonoringhour.com. Before we get to today's guest, I want to just mention that on Tuesday, November 16th, we've had some changes coming up in November. I guess fall is coming in, the seasons are changing, and the show schedules are changing. So Kim Ballas was originally scheduled on the 16th. She has now moved to the 30th. And I've got some feelers out for people that might be here on the 16th. So the 16th is going to be a surprise show to me at this point, as well as to any of you guys that are listening. But it's guaranteed to be fun. So hope that you'll join us then, and definitely on the 30th when Kim Ballas is talking to us about emotional anatomy. So today's guest was recommended to me, again, in one of my favorite ways. Somebody sent me an email and said, hey, have you checked out this person? I think that she'd be appropriate for the show, and you'd probably really love her. And I contacted her, and I just found her fantastic. Her name is Marianne Weidlin, and she facilitates renewal programs for women in mentorship, leadership, and key decision-making roles. She believes the heart and its wisdom must come alive, and I absolutely love that philosophy. So I'd like to welcome to the show today Marianne. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you, from a brisk but sunny Denver, Colorado.
Oh, great, great. I'm glad to hear that. So, Marianne, before we get started, I'd like for you to just take a moment, and you have a website. I'd like for you to just let everybody know how to reach you so that we make sure that we've got that information in up front. Some people like to get on and follow, check out your website while they're listening to the show. So would you mind sharing that information with us?
No, my website is Empowering Vision. It's all one word, empoweringvision.com. And I can also be found on Facebook. And on my website, you can connect with my blog and and Facebook and also LinkedIn.
All right. So you are on the web. Great.
I am on the web.
Empowering Vision, empoweringvision.com.
That's right. So thank you.
You're welcome. Marianne, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got to doing what you're doing today?
Sure. I was born during the Second World War at a difficult time for most of the planet, as a matter of fact. And so I grew up in the end of the war, in the aftermath of the war, and during the Korean War and the Cold War and, oh, my God, bomb shelters. And then pretty soon came along the Vietnam War. And so I grew up with a lot of war in the world around me. And people were not very gentle themselves. I grew up not seeing much love and much tenderness, if any, actually. And as I think a lot of people did in earlier times. And when I was about 8 years old, I remember having lunch with my mother one day, and I said to her, "What is the matter with these people here? Why is everyone so unhappy and angry?" And so that was 1952. Eisenhower was elected, and Queen Elizabeth became queen back then. And that was my world, and that was my question, and that was my initial awakening. And then in July of 1968, I was just almost 24 years old, and I woke up quite abruptly. One day, I was driving the car, so it wasn't waking from a sleep, but waking from a sleep of consciousness, and I suddenly realized I was one of those people who was upset all the time and angry and so forth and so on. And that's when I made a complete and total commitment to changing myself. I knew I didn't know how to do it, but I knew that I must and I knew that I would. And so that's been the driver in my life ever since, is to change myself from being one of those people that confused me and disturbed me as a child. And that's been driving me ever since. And then in 1989... I started working with people to help them change themselves. I had been helping people in business courses before that, five years, before that. But in 89, I realized that we teach what we need to learn and that I needed to step up the pace of my own transformation. And so I knew that if I did it for a living, that I'd always have to be steps ahead of my clientele. And so I started doing self-mastery groups. And then changes evolved after that. And here I am now.
Clever way to motivate yourself. Very good. I like that.
Well, I was already learning everything the hard way, so I decided I would, I would get paid to learn everything the hard way and help people in the process. I'm
kind
very practical.
Yeah, if you're going to blaze that trail, you might as well get something back for it, right, besides the self-growth.
Oh, besides freedom, yeah, money in the account helps too.
Yes, it does. So I have a question for you, and this is something I hear with a lot of people when they are really despondent, especially when they're despondent, you know, and they just don't think they can change. Their world feels really ingrained. How did people around you respond, and what did you do to kind of get over any expectation of others to stay in that negative thinking pattern, one of those unhappy people?
Well, now, mind you, it was 1968. There was a lot going on in 1968. The African Americans were definitely demanding their freedoms, and there were a lot of riots and, you know, burnings and so forth going on. The college students were having peaceful sit downs and stand ups and whatever at colleges, and they were getting gassed and hurt and so forth and so on, and asking for simple things. I think they started out asking whether they wanted. They wanted to wear shorter pants to school in the summer, and the guys wanted to wear their hair longer. So it started out, you know, we all started out with what we wanted, and of course people were seriously resisting the war in Vietnam. That was a big one. And then all kinds of other things followed that. So it was a very, very dicey time. Back then, I wasn't so concerned about what the people around me thought. I'm sure I was concerned. But I was concerned about whether they wanted me. But I wasn't concerned about what they thought so much back then, because not that much different thinking was happening in my particular world. And so I just knew that I had to change. And so I started, my whole life changed from that. And I became a hippie. I was in the San Francisco Bay Area of California, which was a really easy place to become a hippie back then. And so I just started, we did what we called drop out. We dropped out. and And we chose our own way. Now, it was quite similar, all of us. There were certain things that we did similarly, but we chose our own way. And I know in dropping out, there was a fairly high degree of insulation against, or away from, not against, I wasn't an against person, but away from, you know, the mainstream world. Now, the people that had the hardest time in my world were my parents and my brother. And that was challenging. That was definitely challenging. My mother disowned me, and you know, certain things like that. And so, but that kind of behavior wasn't new to me, because it's kind of the way we were treated anyway when we were growing up, because we were so controlled. We didn't do what we were told. So for me, it was just more of the same. And then this insulation away from the world in general. So I really had no idea what was going on in the world in general. I just knew what I was doing and people like me were doing, and that is, we were changing.
Right. I love the way that you're using the word insulation instead of isolation. You were insulated from stuff. You know, you had your core. I love that whole feeling that comes from that word of being insulated. And I also want to, you know, to just kind of take and point out something that you said that was really important. You know, your family of origin basically, you know, just walked away from you and disowned you. But you were already having that same type of feeling. And do you think that people kind of get caught up on that? Well, if I go do this, then they're going to, you know, they're going to do this. And they just don't realize, well, they're already doing whatever that is, but you're letting
them.
No,
wait a minute. You've got too many they's in there. I don't know who the different they's are referring to.
So when someone is, you know, like with you, with your family, they didn't approve of what you were doing, and your mother disowned you.
Mm-hmm.
And then you said, well, but she was already withholding that love. She was already not. If you didn't, like, follow what she was looking for, it was kind of happening anyway. Do you think that people get caught up in how their family of origin, or, like, their significant people, individuals in their lives, what they're going to think and how they're going to treat them, and they don't realize that they're already being treated that way, the way that they're fearing? Do you think that that might be true?
I don't know if they're realizing that they're already being treated like that or they're not. My sense is, especially now, we're so much more aware now than we were back, you know, over 40 years ago. There wasn't much awareness then. We were living in a kind of emotional fog, emotional and a rather pathetic fog, as a matter of fact. And I think back then we didn't really know the difference all that much. We either felt wanted or appreciated or whatever, or we didn't. But we didn't know that there was another way until the 60s happened. And people started waking up. My generation woke up and said, now, wait a minute. In every way imaginable, This is not okay. This hurting each other is not okay. And that's what we awakened to. I think, you know, my generation helped open the heart in that regard. You know, you don't have to beat your children up or hurt them and punish them unfairly for them to get the point. Have a conversation. Of course, people didn't know they were doing that then. So there was so much. My point to you is this. Back then, people were so completely unconscious about most everything, heartfelt, that I don't think we knew the difference. But at the same time, we in that time were waking up, but I don't think we could understand the fine distinctions. I think it was more of an explosion that happened. I think now people can realize, yeah, I don't want to, you know, upset the apple cart, so to speak, because then I'll be rejected even more.
Okay. Do you see a similarity?
Did that make sense to you?
Yes, it
did.
Did
that make sense to you?
Yes, it did. Do you see a similarity between that time and now, or how do you... And living in this time, obviously, you know, you all forged the way. But how do you see that cultivating now? What do you think of the time now and how people are awakening?
My gosh, from what I'm able to see, I mean, I'm on Facebook, so I see what people say on Facebook, which is a good smattering of people. You know, that's a good broad population of people on Facebook, and I see what they're saying, and there is so much consciousness now. Way, way, way more than back then. There's also more people.
Right.
Way, way, way more people. I don't know. It might even be more than twice the number of people. So I don't know what the comparison is in percentage, but I also know that it's all over the world. Every country in this world, in every country, people are waking up and realizing there's more to life than what they've been experiencing. And they want it. And like me back in July of 1968, they don't initially know how they're going to be experiencing it, but they want it. And so they start looking into life, into the world in a different way. They start looking for opportunities. They start listening in a different way. And they start gravitating toward what feels aligned with what they're curious about in terms of a new way of being. And something like Facebook, my goodness, I don't Twitter, so I don't know about what goes on there, but I know that Facebook, if you join Facebook and you start adding friends and you look at the you know, the feed that goes through of all the different posts that are going on about this and that, you realize there's a tremendous amount of consciousness and concern and caring and realism now compared to back then.
Yeah.
I do, however, think that it also is very challenging now in many ways. But I think I'd rather not go into that. In other words, the reason I made that statement is that I just wanted to indicate that I don't think we're moving close to nirvana right away. I think we have a lot of challenges that we've created that we're not looking at with wisdom, such as the environment and lots of things, lots and lots and lots of things.
Mm-hmm. So you do a variety of things with your clients. What is it exactly that you do? Like, what do people come to you for?
Well, I'm a transformational facilitator and evolutionary guide, and my expertise is self-mastery and peak performance. So I facilitate them to transform their self-limiting perceptions and sabotaging patterns in order to further their evolution. And that's the basic sort of elevator statement. And if I were in an elevator, I would say this, by the way. I know that's a mouthful that I said, but that's actually what I do, and I can't really give what I do any real credence without saying it this particular way. I help people to evolve and to become the way in which they really want to be so that they're prouder of themselves, so that they can live, excuse me, and enjoy the peace and the freedoms that they want, and that they can contribute to that, to their world, through their relationships and their work. That's what
I do. So every session you have is individualized.
I can take just a couple minutes here to tell you what I do.
Okay.
I begin by helping clients to determine their limiting patterns and cause, and the problems that these create. Excuse me. Do you mind if I put you on mute and just get right with my voice here? Just a sec.
Go right ahead.
I apologize for that. And without exception, my clients find the cause to be a negative perception or belief. And when that negative perception or belief is triggered, it becomes like a muscle that suddenly spasms. Imagine this as I'm saying it now. You're triggered, and it becomes like a muscle that suddenly spasms. And all your attention and energy is immediately diverted to dealing with the resulting problems and their consequences. So during client sessions, we don't try to figure out how they can resolve their problems. We identify the negative perception and how to transform it into its positive alternative. And then as the related sabotaging patterns are removed, clients can then connect more sincerely with themselves and more genuinely with who they know they are. So essentially, eliminate the negative perception and the related problems disappear. Just don't make the problem better. Find the cause and eliminate it, and the problem disappears. So rather than negatively react and cope to the consequences, the previously cramped energy is then freed up to create the desired life. And this cultivates magnificence and profoundly changes one's perspective, the quality of her performance, relationships, and life. And in this state, nothing can stop us. Possibilities become reality and miracles abound because you're free.
And
it is possible to do this, by the way. It is possible to do this.
You do walk them through the process. It's something that you
absolutely
kind of hold their hand with it and guide them until they can go.
Well, I use a question-asking process that I developed. I started it 21 years ago when I started getting into this work. And it's a process that enables my clients to actually determine the answers to their own questions. Like, for example, what more than anything sabotages my success. I don't, you know, we don't talk back and forth, and I listen to them, and I say, well, you know, have you thought of this? Did you try that? I don't do that. I ask them, I keep asking them to answer their own questions. So they could say, for example, procrastination most profoundly sabotages my success, and I can say, how does it do that? And depending on what they say, I can ask them, why do you do that? And help them determine the cause, and help them understand the consequences of how that procrastination affects them and their relationships, and their bank account, everything, how it affects everything, and to help them to determine that they don't want to do that anymore, and then help them determine what they want to do instead.
And this is all, like you were saying, you developed a question session. So you're asking them questions and letting them come up with the answers. So they're coming up with their own answers. It's not like you're giving them an answer.
No, no, absolutely not. I knew way back then in the 80s, that when I first became self-employed, that I can never know what someone else needs to do or wants to do or could do. I'm not them. And second of all, I believe we all have our own unique destiny. And so I couldn't, if I start giving you ideas without even hardly finding out what you're looking at, I'm interfering. I'm interfering with your ability to follow your own evolutionary continuum out of your unique life context and therefore make choices accordingly. I'm interfering with that. So I don't do that. And I've noticed when I would, and especially in the earlier years of using reflective questioning and learning about it. I mean, I made it up, so I learned it and developed it and refined it. And that is one of the ways in which I learned the hard way. And so that really helps when you learn the hard way if you pay attention to it. So I did. And what I realized is stay out of the way. Do not interfere. Be patient. If somebody seems like they're going around in circles, go around in circles with them until they talk themselves out of it, until they get themselves out of it. In fact, they might even say, I feel like I'm going around in circles, and I'll say, and so why are you going around in circles? And that's usually, well, because I'm afraid of the answer. And why are you afraid of the answer? Well, because I'm afraid I'll fail, or I won't do it right, or I'll do it wrong. And so I just keep helping them follow their own thinking, and I have patience with that, and they get their answer. And I help them. I help them when they start looking at how to change it. I definitely help because I'm listening and I hear what they've been saying, but I don't, you know, just give ideas out of the blue. It doesn't work.
Right.
Maybe they can't afford it. Maybe they don't believe in it. Maybe they tried it and it didn't work. Maybe they couldn't do that because they're limited in some other way. And so it's just, it's to me, it's ridiculous to do that. It's most important to say, so, okay, so you're saying you don't know what to do. Let me ask you this. If you were going to know, what might you do? That really helps them to shift. Now, think about it for not very long ago. Oh, well, I'd do thus and so, and that's usually exactly what they needed. But they were saying, I don't know, because they were afraid. Fear of seeing, quote, the truth, even if it's only a temporary truth, if it hasn't been seen and recognized and embraced yet, fear of that is very, very strong. Because we're still just in the baby stages as a humanity, as a species. We're just still barely opening up and discovering what we each are uniquely about, who we are and what we're about and what matters to us. So it's scary.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that there are like common themes that of steps that you give people to take? You know, are there like, is there a commonality in that, or is everything completely unique?
Well, in the reflective questioning process, the commonality is that I ask questions and listen and guide them to where they're going by following them. So I'm a backseat driver in that regard. I use the same process. Everybody is responding differently, and that is as different as the snowflakes in the sky of snow that we see. I hear tell none of them are the same. They all look different, and that's the way it is with the inside of people, you know, the inner workings of people's minds, their brains, their psyches, whatever we want to call that. That's unique. Our issues are similar. The ways in which we react to them are somewhat similar, but they're also very unique. None are exactly the same. So there's the uniqueness and the similarities. And I've worked with people all around the world, as a matter of fact, in other cultures, completely different religions and cultures and so forth. And there are absolute similarities among us. But the way in which we live through those similarities is always uniquely different. So the corrections for what doesn't work are uniquely different.
So what is your most typical, what do people come to you most typically for? I mean, when they, like, you know, you said that their issues are very similar. What is, like, your number one client or your number one issue that you see? Or do you even know? You have it, like, does it categorize like that?
No, actually, it doesn't categorize into patterns. I ask them in the intake interview, what more than anything do they intend to change or accomplish? And I use either change or accomplish based on what I've been hearing them say in the interview up to that point. But so that I word it as, what more than anything must you change or must you accomplish? I don't work with people who say, I want to be making $1 million within a year. I won't work with someone with that. I would say to them, oh, if that's what you want, then what we need to do is to look at why you need help achieving that. What is it that you feel is blocking you so that you can't do it yourself? And so the person might say, I want to, more than anything, I intend to find out what is keeping me from being able to live abundantly, and I want to change it. So it isn't specific issues like that. It's usually because people are just unhappy in their lives at that point. at least at this point, this is the kind of people that I attract. In the past, I've attracted people with more specific goals. But now I think what's going on is that so many people are just, they don't feel right with themselves. And it's mostly women that I work with. They don't feel right with themselves. They feel off. They know they need to change some things, but they're not quite sure what it is. And it's in the process of talking that we discover what that is. And then we create that initial intention that's actually in a question, and that's the first question I ask in the first session. And I keep asking that question until we've shifted it somehow, and then we go to whatever question seems relevant based on what we've accomplished so far. It's in a 12-hour program, by the way.
Okay.
A lot of people deal with issues like procrastination, but they don't, procrastination, some of them are very clearly that they're judging and they don't want to judge. They don't like their job. They don't like their marriage or the way they're being in their relationships and so forth. I think it's just a great big huge sort of jumble of, I have to change, sort of like I was 42 years ago. I have to change. I'm not quite sure where to start, and I'm not quite sure, you know, what's bothering me, but I just don't feel right.
Yeah, I can see a lot of that going on in the world right now. I want to take the opportunity to say that Marianne's website is www.empoweringvision.com, and you're welcome to go and check that website out and visit with her a little bit more there and see a little bit more about what she does. Marianne, I wanted to ask, you were saying just a moment ago that that it's a 12-hour program. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Sure. It's a 12-hour program, excuse me, one-on-one by telephone. There are 10 one-hour sessions and 1 2-hour session. And the one-hour sessions are just the reflective questioning processes that I told you about. But in my work, I've discovered that there are, and this is true with everyone all over the world, what I'm about to say, there are two what I call prime negative perceptions, or you could call it beliefs, that basically just rule humanity. These two negative perceptions. One is called betrayal, and the other one is called not good enough. The people with the perception of betrayal have a problem with feeling belonging in the world. They didn't feel belonging when they were growing up. They didn't feel wanted. And so they don't feel connected period. Which doesn't say they feel completely disconnected. Some do. Those people are not doing well at all. But there are plenty of people who are who deal with betrayal who aren't completely disconnected, but they've never really emotionally connected with anyone because they never did when they were growing up. And so their issue is essentially between themselves and the world. And people who deal with not good enough did feel like they were wanted and they belong, but they were influenced repeatedly, regularly by someone or several someones who spoke to them as though they were not doing things right, they weren't doing them well enough. If they got a B instead of an A, why didn't they get an A? Go back and work harder, do it better, do it right, or people who never did anything right. So it's a self-esteem issue. It's not a sort of a fundamental belonging issue. It's more an issue with their own performance. So I work with people who experience both of those. I've noticed that older people deal more with, at least the people that I've worked with over the years, And I'm considering myself as an older people, boomers, people who are in the boomers and older, deal more with not good enough than a lot of the younger generation that I've worked with. I've worked with a lot of people in their 20s and 30s. A lot of them deal with the issue of betrayal, a lack of belonging. And understand, they grew up, they're the children of my generation and the boomers' generation. And a lot of divorces going on, and parents leaving and getting married to somebody else, and a lot of loss and gain and loss and gain. And a lot of the gain wasn't very satisfying. You know, like a new step-parent wasn't accepting, was very rejecting. And so that younger generation, I've noticed, is dealing with a lot more with betrayal. In the two-hour session, we do what I call that the transmutation session. That's when we actually begin to transmute that negative perception into a positive perception, like transmuting lead to gold, changing something from one state to another, one dramatically different state to another. And the difference between I don't feel I'm not good enough and I'm perfect the way I am always, and sometimes I make mistakes, that's a completely different perception. That's a completely different feeling. And the other one of being betrayal, feeling like one doesn't belong compared to, of course I belong. I feel it. I may not feel like I want to know everyone, and maybe not everybody wants to know me, but you bet I belong. I'm a valid citizen here, and I feel that. And those two perceptions are the bottom line cause of all of the distress that each one of us deals with. I've worked with clients in the last few years who seem to feel like they deal with both perceptions, which is interesting. I can hear it as I hear them speaking. I can hear that that's true too. But what we do in that session is they list all the difficult different typical triggering circumstances that trigger that perception, and make them revert to the negative coping strategy that they devised when they were young in order to deal with that, the feeling that that perception brings over them, like the feeling of lack of belonging. Each one of us has a different coping strategy that we've made up over the years and that has become a habit, and we revert to it every single time we get triggered, especially when we get seriously triggered. And that coping strategy, which can contain anger, yelling, hurting people, it can have a retreat, shutting down, withdrawing, refusing to communicate, procrastination, addictions, self-mutilation. I've worked with people who self-mutilate. All kinds of interesting steps that people do when they get triggered, and now they're not feeling the way they were, and they're not doing what they were, and they're taking all of this time to deal with this muscle that suddenly cramped or spasmed. Do you see what I'm saying? And they're spending their time doing that. Maybe they go shopping. Maybe they charge things. Everybody does something different. There's some similarities, but they're all quite unique. And they go do that until it kind of somehow wears off, or something really nice happens, and they get shifted, and they forget about that problem. Or more and more people have been in the last number of years have been realizing, oh, this is happening again, and they start working themselves out of it. But gosh, I've worked with people that said, they're essentially never not triggered. Because, especially so like not good enough, for example, actually it's true for both of them, that can keep being triggered. And they never get out of the aura of one before they're now triggered into another one. And so they're living with this. These are,
That I was saying that creates a continuous state of stress, which is challenging.
Boom. It does, and it's a difficult person to know. Because they can't say, oh, well, I'm being triggered and feeling not good enough. They don't know what's going on. They really do not understand how to articulate it. And so you're absolutely right. It's a continual state of stress. And, my compassion for people is just eternal. I don't even judge people anymore, by the way, partially because I've removed it from my consciousness. I don't like it. I didn't like it. I don't want to do it. I don't like what it does to me and what I'm doing to other people by doing that, even if they don't know I'm judging them. I don't like that, so I changed it. But most importantly, I have heard so many people say the reasons for their being the way they are. There's no possible way I could ever judge anybody anymore because everybody has a story. And if you heard their story, oh, good Lord. We just don't talk about it much. Some people talk about their stories, and that's almost all they talk about. So after a while, people don't listen to them anymore. But if you hear somebody's story in the context of assisting them to change it, it's not something you get tired of hearing because they're going on and on and on. You're helping them recognize what happened and feel it, and at the same time realize why the people in their lives were reacting the way they were, as well as why my client was reacting that way. It also helps my client to understand why the people around them were doing it, and it helps them to free themselves from the blame and helps them to forgive other people and themselves. And so it makes hearing the story rather glorious because at the same time, my client and I are changing that story together and helping give themselves a new story. And forgiveness and compassion are absolute keys in that, by the way. Absolute key.
Now, you said that a lot of your clients are women, and I know that you mentioned early on that you helped with businesses. So what are some of the typical negative patterns for women in a business that you're seeing?
I don't work with women specifically in business anymore. Everybody I work with has a job. That's certainly true. I think women, what I can say is that women, wherever women are, we are in the process of coming out of the closet that we as the other sex were in for, looks like as long as history tells. We were controlled and enslaved in some kind of way and had no rights. And we're coming out of that. I think my mother's generation started that in the Second World War because they were, when the men were overseas, somebody had to work in the factories, so the women were, many, many, many women, Rosie Riveter, if you ever heard of her, were working in the factories and taking the jobs and other jobs that the men vacated to go fight, and women started getting a taste of freedom, and that started changing back then, started very definitely changing the roles of women and men. And also divorce started back then, too. So women started really starting to choose for themselves. But I think it's only now, because we're looking at personal growth way more than they, they weren't looking at personal growth in the 50s. Or even really the 60s. We were still trying to figure out what we were doing in the 60s. So it wasn't really until the 70s and definitely the 80s and 90s and the last millennium and now where we're beginning to realize that it's one thing to have freedom. It's a whole other thing to know how to be strong and resilient and yet soft and yielding in this very changing world. And so what I help women do is exactly that. I help them get strong within themselves. I also help them soften the edges that were created to control themselves and to try to control their worlds so that they weren't always being triggered, as a matter of fact. So now that I'm thinking about it, control is a very, very significant issue that a lot of people deal with. Trying to control others because every time somebody does such and such, I feel triggered. And the only way I know how to stop feeling triggers, get them to stop doing that particular behavior. But of course that doesn't work because that person doesn't want to be told what to do. So people fight and argue. What I help my clients do is to change the reaction that they're having within themselves to whatever's going on externally, to help them understand it, understand what it is, where it came from, and why, and then figure out what to change it to. And much of that time is thinking with wisdom, but it's also communicating with wisdom, not yelling and demanding, but communicating clearly and directly without judgment, and with the intention to seek a resolution with someone together, with them.
So, Marianne, it sounds like you really enjoy what you do. Can you share why you love your work?
Well, depending on when somebody asks me that, I could give you a different answer every time, because it's so vast. But, I think the truest statement is it's what I am, I'm a transformer. I decided in 1968 that a lot of our little hippie slogan back then was, we wanted peace, love, and freedom. And for me, it's never changed. I've got the peace and I've got the love. And the freedom I have almost, and what I've come to understand is the freedom from the menacing effect of my own mind on myself. And so I love my work because I understand it and I'm good at it, so I get to feel like I'm being of value every single day that I do a session. I get to watch people change. I get to listen to the ahas. That's a really good feeling. I'm inspired. I'm constantly inspired. I'm allowed in to the innermost workings of someone's private thoughts in a way that to me is totally sacred. I absolutely adore that. And I get to watch miracles happen. And it allows me to now, I absolutely can look back at my life, and it was not an easy one, not by a long shot. It was very, very difficult what I chose. Seems like I chose every challenge there was so that I could understand people, so I could figure myself out, and then what I didn't understand from other people, I would know myself, so I could help them more. Going through all of that was so worth it. I'm at the point now where, yep, I'd go through it all again. I would go through it all again to be at this point in my life where I can say, if you want freedom and you want assistance to get you started on your way toward it, go to my website and email me from the contact page there. Check out the website, see if it feels right. Email me. Let's have a conversation and see if we're right to connect together. Because to me, there is nothing for me in my life that's any more important than doing my work now. Nothing. People need to feel good about themselves. They need to feel good in this world, especially as it's in some ways getting easier, in some ways getting much more difficult. And we need to know how to stand in the presence of any kind of change, unexpected or otherwise, and do it with grace and ease and strength and respect and wisdom. And to me, helping people do that, that's the best. If I couldn't do that, I would like to leave my body.
Yeah. For people that are listening, maybe not today, but in, as this in the archives, and for those that are listening right now also, is there, like, what do you see as the first step? Is there something that you can offer them to start helping them shift their lives and change and maybe get to the point where they're ready to reach out and have someone else help them really make a significant change? If they're kind of teenagers.
I do happen to have that. It's on my website. It's in the kind of in the kind of bottom right, not all the way to the bottom, but the bottom right of a line of services that I offer. And it's called Your Accelerator. It's free. It's a year-long process, Your Accelerator. And it's a little facilitation plan that I devised and uploaded as of December 31st last year, I think. It's a year-long plan that people get one email at a time. I forget how many emails are. There are maybe a couple dozen that they get over that year's time. Facilitate a process of change. I'm actually doing it, and it has been phenomenal for me. It's just no more than two questions in each little email, and you get it at first a little bit more often, twice a week, and then once a week, and then once a month, and until the end of the year, and you can sign up again. I'm actually going to put something else on there, too, now. I'm going to add another one here. By the time this one's done, there will be another one that the people who are finishing this one can do. It's a different design, but it's still a facilitation plan. And, that's there. It's available for free. And enjoy it. It's use it with earnestness and wisdom, and you'll get back in kind to the energy you give.
And I'd just like to say that your website is www.empoweringvision.com. That's empoweringvision.com. So that sounds like a great tool to have on there, a year-long program walking through and at no charge. And I'm sure that if they wanted to work more in depth with you, that you just mentioned that there was a contact email, a form that they could fill out where they could contact you directly. And I also noticed that you said that you'd have a conversation with them to see if y'all were right or not. And I like that, because some people would just take on a client even if they felt that was maybe a mismatch for them. So I like that idea of integrity that you've instilled there.
Well, I do everything now that I do because it's what I discovered I need and what I feel my clients need. A relationship like the one that I end up having with my clients is so intimate because we're really reworking that person's mind. We have to like each other. We have to trust each other. So I'll do an intake that's as long as an hour because I want to make sure that we both not only want to know each other, but we feel that we would be a good team for their success. I insist on succeeding, and so I'm very discerning about who I work with. And I make sure that I feel right about them and they feel right about me. We've got to feel that equally. And also, after I've started working with them, sometimes I feel like it's not the right connection. Some of the people that I hear from actually really need to be going to a therapist first to release a lot of the emotion that's backed up, and that's not what I do. I'm a self-mastery mentor, a peak performance mentor, and so I will suggest that they find a therapist, especially that deals with emotional release, trauma release, and then they can come back to me if they want to later. And sometimes people don't like the way in which I work. It's very direct and gentle, but direct. And so they decide they don't want to stay as well. That isn't as much anymore, but it can. It can be that. So the point is we need to be as integrous, both of us, about looking at this relationship as possible because they're... success is at stake, And they're also paying me and taking their time. And so we need to make sure that it's the right choice.
Well, Marianne, we've got a little less than 5 minutes left. Is there anything that you want to share with the audience that you may not have been able to cover in this past time?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, you know what? I'd like to read just one paragraph. And I know it. I sent it to you and the information that I sent to you. And you read one line from it. But I love this because it represents me and what I feel about what we need at this particular time in humanity's evolution, and what I'm completely and totally devoted to. It's in regard to the renewal programs for women that I facilitate. So I believe that the heart and its wisdom must come alive. You read that. The heart in each of us in caring for ourselves, in caring for each other, in caring for all life. An awakened heart inspires wisdom, and all is cultivated and well tended. Women tend the heart. We are the nurturers and protectors of life. Clearly, it's time for us to assist humanity into a thriving future.
That's great.
And Lynn, I want this for myself, for my daughter, for my granddaughter, for her children and their children's children, all future generations, and all of us who are living now, to live in a thriving humanity.
Well, that's a great sentiment. And it's a great wish for everyone involved. It's wonderful. Marianne, I'd like to thank you very much for being here on the show. We've got some comments in the chat room saying thank you, great guest. So you've definitely been appreciated here today. And again,
thank you so much. I appreciate your having me, and thank you so much.
You're welcome. So I would just like to remind you all that we air every other Tuesday, so we'll be back on again on the 16th as a surprise guest to myself and to everybody else. I'm not really sure how that's going to come out, but I trust that the universe will fill that slot in some manner, or that there's a reason that it won't be filled. So I'm absolutely having trust in that. It's not a problem, but definitely on the 30th, we're going to have Kimberly Ballas here. She's going to be talking to us about emotional anatomy. So she's wonderful at taking questions and just loves to hear from people. So definitely we invite you to call in. Our call-in number is 347-838-8944, and to send in questions from the chat room. So I think that, you know, based on the conversation that we had here today, Sabina Kevenberg wrote a song and has sung a song called I Invite You to Be Free, and I would just like to end with that, thanking her again for allowing us to use her music. Have a wonderful couple of weeks, and I'll be with you all again soon.
Live your life out loud.